Yeah, we're holding on page 60 in Chagiga Osiyud. We've been talking about Maisa Merkava, in particular focusing on Yechezkel's vision of it, which is where we get most of the details about it in Tanakh. So the Gemara continues, Omar Rav or Rava. Now, you have to consider, so we have Yechezkel's long description. We have in Perek Aleph of his Sefer, he spends about 25 psukim describing the Maisa Merkava and the Evishtha's throne and so on and so forth. And then he in Perek Yod again, he devotes about 20 psukim to the subject, about 15, 20 psukim to the subject. So quite a lot of detail. On the other hand, you have to contrast with Yeshayah. We have Yeshayah's description in Perek Vov of his Sefer. We have his Akhtarah of Parashas Yisroel. He just says, So I saw Hashem sitting on an exalted high throne, he sees there are Srofim standing in attendance on Hashem. Each one has six wings, and he describes what they do with the six wings. And that's the extent of his description. So, Omar Rav or Rava, Komash or Yechezkel, Ra Yeshayah. Everything that Yechezkel saw and described in such detail, Yeshayah also saw. But Yeshayah didn't bother giving all the details because the Ma Yechezkel Jaimah, because what is Yechezkel like in that regard? Leben Kfar Shiraas HaMelech, like a villager who sees the king. Meaning, so as opposed to Ma Yeshayah Jaimah, Leben Krach Shiraas HaMelech. And Yeshayah is like a person in the city who saw the king. So Rashi explains the contrast is that Yeshayah was a Ben Malachim. He was actually descended from a royal family. We learned back in Megillah that Omotz, Yeshayah's father, and Amatziah, the king of Yehuda, were brothers, which makes Yeshayah a nephew of King Amatziah, and later on he started saying Nevuah in the time of Uzziyahu, Amatziah's son, so he's a first cousin of the king, and then he continues in the following couple of generations, so he's very closely related to them. So he grew up in a palace, and Bechlal, Rashi continues that a person from the city where the king lives, who sees the king all the time, he's not particularly so amazed by it or anything that he should have to go into great detail. As opposed to Yechezkel, didn't come from such a background. Tosfos says that, Tosfos gives a different take on it. If a villager were to say, I saw the king, what do you mean, you saw the king? Since when does the king come to our village? He's going to have to describe, well, I saw Pliny and Pliny, the minister was with him, and Pliny, his attendants, and so on and so forth, and that establishes his truthfulness, his veracity, that everybody can, oh yeah, you know, I know which minister you're talking about. Okay, yeah, you must know what you're talking about. As opposed to, so that's Yechezkel, so he has to give all the detail. Yeshayah is seeing Hashem, Yoshev HaKisei Rom Benisa, so he doesn't have to explain because he's seeing Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash. He's seeing the Shul of Malei Mesahechol, so to speak, the hem of Hashem's royal robe is filling the Hechol, so he's seeing him right there in Yerushalayim, so he doesn't need to give details because everybody will believe what he's saying anyway. Marsha says closer to Rashi. Again, Rashi had said that he was Godol, that he's Ben Malachim, but Godol B'Palterin, and then Marsha spells that out more. Again, Yeshayah is from a royal family. Yechezkel, on the other hand, he says, not only was not from a royal family, but B'chlal, he came from a village. Marsha says he came from the city of Anossos. Now, the truth is, actually, it doesn't actually say in the Pesukim where Yechezkel came from. And based on what we learned in Megillah, the Gemara had said over there, whenever it doesn't say what city a Navi came from, we have to assume he came from Yerushalayim. However, he's introduced as Yechezkel ben Buzi, and the Targum says on it that Buzi is another name for Yirmiyahu. And Yirmiyahu, we know, came from Anossos, says that in the opening of his Sefer. So Marsha, I guess, is basing himself on that when he says here that Yechezkel came from Anossos as well. Anyway, the point is, Yechezkel coming from a village, then he has to give the details, and he's all excited and agog about it, and therefore he's giving all the details at great length. There's places in the Chassidus where it talks about in a similar vein also, so you have, sort of, based on what Rashi is saying, that a city boy sees the king all the time, so he's not particularly overawed by it, Mashenk, and the Ben Kfar. So the equivalent of it is that you have a Ben Kfar would be us in Olam Hazeh Gashmi, and for that matter, the lower levels Malachim. You know, we say in davening that they do a rash gadol, a huge noise when they're lifting themselves up and saying Baruch Kved Hashem Imkayim. What's the huge noise is related to this. They're on a lower level of perception of Alakus. So when they're able to raise themselves higher, they get all excited about it, and excitement means a lot of noise, as opposed to you have the higher level malachim do it quietly, curled mamadaka, because they're, so to speak, used to it. So that's the difference between the Ben Kfar and the Ben Krach. The Rebbe also talks about it in connection with its El now, Melech Basodeh, so we have like kind of the best of both. We're in the Kfar, and yet the king is coming to us, and therefore we have that capability to become excited. The king is coming to visit us and to see all the details and be able to tell them over and be impressed by them. Anyway, so that's the difference, though. So the bottom line is, Yechezkel was taking many, many psukim to describe all the details that Yeshaya did not, but they both saw the exact same thing. Talking more about the details of Yechezkel's vision, Omer Eshlokish, my dichtiv, what does it mean? It says in the pasuk, Ashiro Hashem ki goi go. I will sing to Hashem because he's goi go, which means, literally it means that he's very highly raised up. But it means Shiru L'mishim is Goy ala Geyim. Means that Hashem is greater and higher than the Geyim, than the highest examples of their respective kingdoms in the world. The king among all the wild animals is the lion. Melech shebehemas shur, among the domestic animals, the king is the ox. Melech shebeufas nesher, among the birds, the king of them is the nesher. Usually, by the way, we translate nesher as an eagle, although there's a Tosfos in Chulin that points out, and there are various other Rishonim that point out there are issues with that identification, what the Gemara tells over there about the physical characteristics of a nesher doesn't match the eagles that we know of, so a couple of Mephoshim suggest that it might be some kind of vulture. Whatever it is, it's considered the king of the birds in the sense that it flies higher than all of them, as we know the famous Rashi about that the eagle carries its young ones on its back, is not afraid of any other bird attacking it, it's only afraid of people shooting arrows at it. So in that sense, it's a melech shabbos. But Adam is Goaleim, a person is higher than all those creatures, because Hashem put mankind in charge, or a Dubit Gasayom, etc. V'Hakadosh Baruch Hu is Goalkulam, V'Halkol Olam Kulay, and Hashem is higher than them, and then the whole rest of the world. In other words, that we have, that the Chayes HaKodesh themselves have the faces of these four creatures, each of which is the master and the king in their realm, and then Hashem shows they're just his servants, they're just the ones who carry his Kisei covenant and his Merkava. Marsha also adds, you know, the context of it in Oz Yoshu is Sus Verochle Rama Vayam. You have a person dominates over the horse and rides over it. And Hashem shows that he's higher than that, and in that case Hashem took the Mitzriim, the horses and the riders, and threw them all into the Yasa. For that matter, the horse itself, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, is a very proud creature. So the horse is a very proud creature, and a person prides himself on that and dominates the horse and rides it. And Hashem shows his pride and his greatness over all of them by controlling and manipulating them as he needs. Next, Kosev Echadoimer, in the Psukim in Perek Aleph of Yechezkel, so it describes the Chayes. It says, Mus Pneim Pnei Adam, the appearance of their faces was the face of a person, meaning on one side they had a face of a human being, or Pnei Aryeh La Yomin La Arbata, and then on the right side of that, for each of the four Chayes, there was a face of a lion, or Pnei Shermeh Asmer La Arbata, on the left side there was a face of an ox, or Pnei Nesher La Arbata, and then in the back, opposite the human face, there's a face of an eagle. So those are the four faces of the Chayas. And actually, by the way, mentions on the psukim over there, based on the Midrashim, that within each face itself, there are like sub-faces. So like you have altogether, there are a couple of hundred faces. But the bottom line is, these are the four faces that he saw. Human being, ox, lion, and eagle. The Uktiv, later on in Perek Yud, when Yechezkel describes it again. So in Perek Aleph, by the way, he's doing it as an introduction to his whole Sefer, saying that he saw the Merkava of Hashem, and then Hashem speaks to him and starts telling him to go speak to the Jewish people and get them to do tshuva to avert the churban. Later on in Perek Yud, he's describing after the Eibishter has shown him in a series of nevuos, a lot of the Avodah Zarah and all the other things that they're doing wrong in Yerushalayim, then Hashem, it's time for the Shechina to leave the Beis HaMikdash, so then Yechezkel sees the Shechina, so to speak, climbing onto the Merkava and then leaving the Beis HaMikdash, so then he describes the Merkava again there in Perek Yud, but with some differences, this being one of them. So in Perek Yud, he says, Va'abav Fonim La'echad, each of the Chayas had four faces, Pnei Echad Pnei Akruv. One side is the face of a kruv, which we'll define soon what that means. Pnei Asheni Pnei Adam, the second is a human face. Vashlishi Pnei Arya, then there's a lion's face. Vorevi Pnei Nosher, and then there's an eagle's face. He's not mentioning the ox. What happened to him? The answer is, Amar Shlokish Yechezkel Bikish Olav Rachmin B'Hofke L'Kruv. Yechezkel, when he first saw the vision of the Chayis HaKodesh, with a Pnei Shur on one side, he davened for Rachmin to Hashem, and asked that it should be changed, and had it changed into a kruv, which we'll explain soon what a kruv is. On the front of it, he says, Tashem, Rebun Shalom, in Kateger, Nasa Sanegar, a prosecutor, an accuser, can't become a defendant. Here, the purpose, one of the things the Malachim are supposed to do, is to defend the Jewish people before you, and here, a Pnei Shur evokes the Chet Egel. So it's going to be a constant reminder of the Chet Egel. So, in fact, Marsha also adds that you have like this. You have when you have the right and the left, we know right represents chesed and represents, the looking for schos, and the left is gvura, and looking for choiva. So what does he describe? So you have the Arya is on the right side representing chesed. Mind you, by the way, it talks about in various places in Siddur that usually an Arya, usually a lion, has to do with gvura, but it talks about how there's also chesed interconnected with it. Anyway, then the shur, on the other hand, is on the left side representing that it's melamed choiva. But Yechezkel saying, okay, you have to have something, there has to be something there that's melamed choiva, but at least it shouldn't be a kateger, it shouldn't be a something that constantly evokes the chetaeg. So it shouldn't become a sanegor, it shouldn't become a defender, and therefore he asks for it to be changed into a kruv. My kruv, so what actually is, my kruv, so what is the actual meaning of the word kruv? Amrababahu hiravda. It means like a child. Shekhen Koren, the bubble, Yenuka Ravya. In bubble, in Aramaic, a child is called Ravya. You find it in various places in Targum. So Kiruv then means like it has the face of a child. Well, Omalahura Popla Baya, Omalaya, I guess it's supposed to be Elamayata, by that logic. You're telling me then that of the two faces that he sees in Perek Yud, one's a kruv and one's a human face. If a kruv is a child, then it's the same thing. So there's two of the same face and then two other faces. So the answer is Ape Rabri Ape Zutri. You have a large face, an adult face, and then you have a small face, a child's face. So yeah, two of them are human faces, but one adult and one child. This is where we get over here. We get translated into another dialect of Aramaic. The dialect used in the Zohar is where we get the terms Arich Anpin and Arich Anpin and Zer Anpin. And it is based on this. Marsha explains on the vert. So we have like this. The Midrashim bring that Yaakov Avinu's image is engraved on the Kisei HaKavod. So now we're saying over here there are two human faces among the Kruvim, a large one and a small one. They represent respectively Avraham and Yaakov, Chesed and Tiferes. So the small one, meaning the younger one, represents Yaakov, who's younger than Avraham, and the large one represents Avraham, Ha'odim Agodo Ba'anokim. The Medrash says that there's a pasuk that refers to the giants in Eretz Yisrael, and really it means the giant Baruch Nidus Avraham. There's also an interesting point that Chassam Sofer makes on this. Okay, so Yechezkel is asking if Pnei Shur should be transformed into something else. Why tap the daft of the image of a child? So he says because that after the Chet Egel, after they did tshuva, then they became like they became Bali tshuva, and they became like the cotton shenola gummy, like they completely transformed themselves as though they're newborns. Therefore, in token of that, the Eibishter transformed it into a baby's face. And he says also that's why you have in the original description, he has the Pnei Shur later on in the list. Now in the new description, he has Pnei HaKruv first. Because the Makam Shabbat the Truva Omni and Sadiq and Gmurim Khadam Lamud, now the Pnei Kruv represents the Jewish people's status as Bali Truva, then it deserves to be listed first. Continues the Gemara. Kosov Echad Omer. Now let's do a contrast between Yeshaya's vision and Yecheskel's. And we said before that they saw the same thing. Kosov Echad Omer Sheish Knafayim Laechad. Yeshaya describes the Malachim that he saw that they have six wings apiece. But then Yecheskel describes Va'abof Fonim Laechas. Each one had four faces. Va'arba Knafayim Laechas Lahem. And each one of these Malachim had four wings. So is it four or six? Now, Tosfos points out that there's an obvious difference. They're talking about different malachim. Yeshaya is describing Srafim, Srafim Omnu Mimaloi. Yechezkel is describing Chayas. Very simple, you could say they're different malachim. In fact, the Rambam lists them as different levels of malachim. However, Tosfos says the Gemara is assuming that they would have the same number of wings. They may be different in other ways, but at least they should have the same number of wings. So what is it, six or four? And the answer is like Tasha, Kan Bismancha Bismikdash Kayim, Kan Bismanchen Bismikdash Kayim. Yechezkel is talking about when the Bismikdash is still standing. Yechezkel is already, it actually says, we made Daniel. That's a little hard to understand because we're talking about Yechezkel over here, but whatever. Daniel, in Daniel's times, yeah, Bismikdash had already been destroyed. Yechezkel lived through the time of the Churban. So when he sees the vision, okay, he sees it a few years before the Churban, but still, it's already, the process is underway. So Kaviyachol Shnismatu Kanfei HaChayas. So to speak, the number of wings on the Chayas has been reduced from six down to four. There's a couple of vertlach on it here. The Gemara is going to say which two are missing, but there's a couple of interesting points on it. One is that it's brought in that thing, I think Zoyar or whatever, that the six wings correspond to the six words of Baruch Shem Kvar Machos Olam Vod. So if two wings of them are missing, the two that are missing are the ones that correspond to Kvod Malchuska. Because during the Zman Shein Bismik Ishkayim, we don't have the Eivishtas Malchus revealed here on earth as openly as it was before. And that's what we say in Musaf of Yom Tov Davening, Elokeinu Elokeinu, Galik Kvod Malchuska, Alein Mehera, reveal Kvod Malchuska, make it that those wings can be restored to the Chayis HaKodesh with the rebuilding of the Vismich. That's one point. There's also a verse that they say on it, that I don't remember who says this, that the six wings also correspond to the Shisha Sidre Mishnah. And in the time of Golus, we really only have four of them that we're actually able to do, at least to some extent. Zroyim, not so much, only in Eretz Yisrael. And not all of it is applicable. Daraisa, so we have Moyed Noshim Nizikim, Kodshim, okay, Kola Osef Kateras Chatas, Kola Osef Kateras Ola, Kilekuv Ola, so let's consider that we can do it. Those are the four Sidorim, after all, that Talmud Bavli is composed on. But we basically don't have Zroim, and we basically don't have Taras, so in that sense, again, two of the wings, two of the Sidorim are missing. So the Gemara asks, "Hey, minayu imut? Which of the wings are missing?" Now Yeshaya describes when he says that they have six wings. He says, "V'shtayim yechasa fonav." Two of them, the malach would use to cover his face. Or v'shtayim yechasa raglav. Two of them he would use to cover his feet. Or v'shtayim yeoifes, and then he would fly with the other two. Incidentally, by the way, when Yechezkel describes the Chayis HaKodesh, he describes that their feet look calf regal eagle. They look like the sole of the foot of a calf. And they also, it's brought, the reason why they cover it is for the same reason we said before, in Kateger Nasus and Neger, we don't want to have feet of a calf on constant display in front of the Eivishter, so to speak, which would evoke the Chateg. Anyway, so now we're saying that of the six wings, two of them are missing. Which ones are missing? So Omer Rav Chanina, Rav Chanano, Omer Rav, it's the two with which they say Shira, which when the Pasuk says with two of them they fly, that's what it means, the two with which they fly and say Shira. And we know that. How do we know? Where do we see that? That flying has to do with singing. The Pasuk says that with two of them they fly, the Korazel Zeva Omar, and the next Pasuk continues, they call to one another and they say Kodesh, Kodesh, Kodesh. You have a different Pasuk. If you even fold your eyes at it, meaning at the Torah, if you even just close your eyes for a minute, and they'll disappear. And Torah is compared to a song. So we see that the Yo'ifif refers to singing a Shira in front of Hashem. So it doesn't just mean flying, it means that they're singing a Shira to Hashem with those wings, and now those wings are missing. Marsha explains, in other words, the point is, because with the Churban, the amount of Shira that's sung in front of Hashem is reduced. So that's what Rav Hanan says in the name of Rav. Rabbanan Amri. On the other hand, the Chachamim, the other Chachamim say, Oisin Shemachasis Behen Raglei. The ones that are missing are the ones which the Malachim cover their feet. Because after all, when Yechezkel describes their feet, now Yeshaya says, they cover their feet with two wings, which means the Pashas. Yeshaya wouldn't have been able to see the feet because they're covered. On the other hand, Yechezkel describes, their feet are a straight foot, which is why in Shemana Esra we put our feet together straight in order to be somewhat like the Malachim. So earlier, by the way, Torah was to point out that Yeshara is Gematria 515. That had to do with everything that we learned before about the 15 times 500 distance from the earth until the highest HaKadosh. So he's seeing their feet and describing them as straight. He loved the image. If the wings hadn't been reduced, if the feet were still covered, then how would Yechezkel know? Therefore, the Chacham say, obviously those wings must be the ones that are missing. So Mar says that's not a proof. Dilma de Galoy Vahli. No, you could say very simple that they were uncovered and he was able to see it for a moment. Maybe they're not covered the entire time. De Eloi Temahachi, after all, if you're not gonna say that, the Pasuk also says he describes their faces with Muspneam Pnei Adam. He says they have a face of a person and the various other faces, and Yeshaya had described the Shtayim Yechasafana, but they're covering their faces with two wings also. Hachinami de Imut, are you gonna say those wings disappeared also? Then what wings do they have left? El of the Galoy Va'achile. Obviously, it means they were revealed for a moment and he was able to see them. Hachinami, the same thing. You could answer as far as the feet, the Galoy Va'achile. You could say they were revealed for a moment and he was able to see them. So no proof for what the Chachamim are saying that the missing two wings are the ones that they cover their feet with. But the Gemara said, what kind of an argument is that? Hachi Hashta. How do you think to compare those two things? Vishlema ate, when it comes to the faces of the Malachim, ora ara de la galuya kami rabbe. It's derech eretz yik, it's a normal thing for a servant to uncover his face in front of his master. Yes, the Malachim are keeping their face basically covered, but it's normal enough that a servant or an attendant attending on his master is going to at least sometimes uncover his face. So it's reasonable enough that sometimes the Malachim would relax their wings and their faces could be seen. El kare, when it comes to the feet, lav orach arav adaluya kamerabe. It's not derech eretz to uncover them ever in front of their master. So why would they be uncovering their feet at all? It must be because they couldn't cover them anymore because those two wings are missing. So therefore, yes, that we can, after all, go with what the Rabbanan are saying, that the two wings that are missing are the ones for their feet. Again, unlike with, as opposed to Rav says that it's the middle two wings, the ones with which they fly and sing shir. Marsha explains, so what would be the significance of that? So if we say the ones, like Rav, the ones that are missing, are the ones they sing Shira with, then the verdict is, after the Churban, then the Shira in front of Hashem is reduced, because Hashem, so to speak, mourns for the Churban also. We had about that earlier in the Masechta, where you had a psukim over there, that Hashem, so to speak, cries over the Churban. But what about the ones with the feet? Marsha explains, because again, we said that the feet are ketaf regel egel, they resemble the sole of the foot, the hooves of an eagle, and usually the Malachim would keep them covered, again, in order not to bring up the chetah eagle. But now, at the time of the Medrash, the Gemara here doesn't mention that point, Marsha says. The Medrash mentions that point. Well, therefore, according to the Medrash, we have a very neat reason why the wings that cover them should disappear at the time of the Churban, because at the time of the Churban, in fact, that was when the Aveira of the Chetah Egel was invoked, and the final bit of punishment that had to be done for that was done. There's actually a pasuk in Yechezkel where he describes at one point he sees a group of malachim coming to mark the sentence of death anybody in Yerushalayim who's not going to survive the Churban, and the expression is korvu pkudos seir. The Gemara explains that means the pkudos related to a fakadia b'yem pokti, a fakadia aleim chatosam, that Hashem says after the chetah egel there's going to be, for generations to come, there's going to be a remnant of the chetah egel which is going to be gradually paid off. Now at the time of the Churban, that was the last. That's the curve of Pekuda Seir. It's time for that final Pekuda of what's left of the Chet Egel. Well, therefore, Marsha says, okay, well, that explains why the half regal Egel is now uncovered and the wings are removed. But he says the Or Gemara, which doesn't mention that point, and makes it sound, and the Gemara is implying that the whole reason why the feet should be covered is not in order to avoid evoking the Chet Egel, but just Kutnias, then why, what would be the logic? Why should those wings be removed? And Marsha leaves the question open. Let's talk about other psukim that seem to contradict each other regarding the malachim. You have a pasuk in Daniel where he sees Hashem sitting down kavyachol to judgment, to judge the four malchus, the four empires that harassed the Jewish people. And he describes the malachim that are attending on Hashem, elef alfin yisham shunei, 1,000 times 1,000, so 1,000,000 malachim are serving Hashem, the riboy ribavon, 10,000 times 10,000, so 100,000,000, kadamohi yukumon, are standing before Hashem, meaning that you have like higher level malachim who serve Hashem, and then you have the lower level malachim that are just standing in front of Hashem as derech kavod, like an honor guard. But in other words, the point is, Daniel is mentioning actual numbers. They're 1,000,000 or 100,000,000. They're large numbers, but they're still finite numbers. But then you have a pasuk in Iyov, Hayesh Misper L'Gdudam. Is there a number of the regiments of Hashem's of Hashem's malachim, which implies there's an infinite number of malachim? So what is it? And the answer is like Kasha. Again, like with the wings, like Kasha. Kan bisman shebeis mikdash kayim, kan bisman shein bis mikdash kayim. It depends whether the bis mikdash is standing or not. Daniel lived already after the korban, so when he sees his vision, he's seeing a smaller number of malachim. Kavyochol, with the korban, the Hashem's retinue in Shemayim is reduced. Instead of it being an infinite number of malachim, now it's a large but still finite number. On the other hand, another explanation, Tanya, Rebbe Omer, Meshum Abba Yosi, Ben Yostoi, the difference is you have to distinguish between the individual malachim and the groups that they make up. Elof alfin yisham shune l'gdud or mispa gdud echol. When we say that there are a 1,000,000 or 100,000,000, it means within each regiment, within each unit of malachim, there are that many. The legud of ein mispar, as far as the number of regiments, as far as the number of army units of malachim themselves, that's infinite. So that makes both psukim work without having to resort to saying that one's during the time of the Beis Mikdash and the other one is not. Rabbi Yumi Ba'aba gives a different answer, that when we say Elof Alpin Yisham Shunei, when it says 1,000,000 malachim serve Yisham Shunei, now Yisham Shunei can mean they serve him, which would mean Hashem, but instead the Yud and the He over there in Aramaic is like Vav in Lashon Kodesh. It means him. It can also mean it. So therefore, it doesn't mean that they serve Hashem. Obviously they do, because everything serves Hashem. But in other words, their job is more directly l'nahar din. They're serving, as in they're supplying the material for nahar din. Shenema, as Daniel goes on to describe, or actually earlier in that pasuk, he begins that pasuk by saying, nahar din, after he describes Hashem's throne, nahar din nur nogid v'nofik min kadimari, a river of fire. Din nur is Aramaic for of fire. So a river of fire flows forth and comes forth from before Hashem. Elof alfin yisham shunei v'gemer, 1,000,000 malachim yisham shunei. So Rabbi Yirmiyah Ba'aba is saying, you thought that the elof alfin yisham shunei refers to Hashem. No, what it's referring to is the it of earlier in the pasuk, the nahar dinur. These 1,000,000 malachim, their job is to supply material for the nahar dinur. As far as the malachim that actually serve Hashem, those are an infinite number, as it says in the pasuk in the year. So in modern Hebrew, by the way, they use the word nahar dinur to refer to the Milky Way, but obviously that's not what it means over here. Anyway, mehechan nafak. So we're saying that these malachim serve and supply the nahar dinur. Where is it actually coming from? The pasuk says that it comes from before Hashem, but how does there come to be a river of fire? Amar Rav Yirmiyah Ma'aba, Amar Rav, mize osan shel chayas. It comes from the sweat of the chayas. So in other words, the idea is that, so to speak, the Chayas HaKodesh are carrying Hashem's Merkava, and so to speak, Marashah explains, so to speak, like they sweat, like a human being would sweat from carrying a heavy burden, and from that there comes a river of fire, which, as the Gemara is going to say, falls on the head of the Rishon. But Tosfos adds a lot more detail to that you have like this. There are different kinds of malach. We know that all the malachim sing to Hashem. But we have like this. We have the more permanent malachim, like Michal and Gavriel, but they take their turn singing to Hashem. Then you have the malachim that are created every day, and like they're in a rush. They don't wait their turn. They start singing Shira right away. and therefore they're nisbatel. They show that they don't have enough bitul to, or maybe just the opposite. They have too much bitul, rotze without shoy, whatever it is, and therefore they wind up being extinguished in fire. And therefore, so they're the ones that become the nahar dinur. Tosfos explains that that's, we have, in davening, we have the first kind of malachim, kulam oimlim brum olam, or mashmim yira yachad b'kol, they have yira. They don't just start saying whenever they feel like it. They have yira, and they have bitul to the Eveshter, and they wait their turn until they can say shira, and v'noisim ba'ava v'shus zelozen. They give each other permission, and they wait their turn. As opposed to earlier in Yotzer, we have the Yishtabach Shem Chalam Makan, Yotzer Meshosim, that Hashem creates Meshosim, that Meshosim, they're the ones who jump at the opportunity to sing Shira, and then immediately they become this fire of Nahar Dinur. And then you have, on the other hand, Hashem Meshosim, Kulam Oimlim Brum Olam, refers to the Malachim, whereas he goes on to say, wait their turn, and they remain long term. So in davening, we're mentioning both kinds of Malachim. The point of all of it, by the way, is after all, it talks about in many Maimonides, the whole idea of the brachas of that Alter Rebbe mentioned the point in Tanya, it's elaborated on in many Maimonides. The whole point of the brachas before Krishna is to stress the point that Eidishka has, as we're saying over here, millions and trillions and an infinite number of malachim serving him on very high ruchniistic levels, and yet, Avas Olam, Avtonu Hashem Alekeinu, Hashem says, never mind them, I'm interested in the Jewish people. And then that leads us into the Ava, into the Vahakras Hashem Alekeinu, on the Kabbalah, so about the Shemayim of Shema. So therefore, that's why we have to go on at such length over there to describe the various classes of malachim and the levels that they're on, and yet that Niyah HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Hashem sets that all aside and focuses on us. So Lahechan Shofet, the Gemara continues. So we're saying the Nahar Dinur flows. Where does it flow to? Where does it pour out into? Amar Mazutra Batruvia Amar Rav Al Roshei Rishoyim Yochol B'Gehen. It falls on the heads of the Rishoyim in Gehen. Shenemar, as the passage says, Hine Saras Hashem Chema Yotza. Behold, the storm of Hashem is coming out as an anger. The Sarim is Cholol, and a storm that's going to develop. Al Rosh Rishoyim Yochol, it lands on the heads of the Rishoyim. So we're saying, in other words, that this Nahar Dinur represents the, so to speak, the anger of Hashem, and it winds up pouring on them. It has, there's a number of different meanings in that that it talks about in various places in Siddurs and in various other levels of learning Torah. It represents the idea in some places in Siddurs it talks about that the Ze'osen Shal Chayas, the sweat of the Chayas, represents, again, like we were talking about before, the Rash Gadol, the fact that they have this tremendous excitement they're finding more about Elokus, and that causes them to sweat. And the same from that comes something that goes on to the Rishoyim, because like Ha'itochen, that you didn't have that mentality to try to come close to the Eidishen, instead Ha'itochen that you had the chutzpah to sin against the Eidishen. There's places where it talks about that the Zayosin Shalchayas is, like the, we're saying over here, that it represents the anger of Hashem, so it represents the negative side of Midas HaGvura. These Malachim, the Zayosin, the Chayas themselves, represent to a certain extent Gvura, and Zayosin Shalchayas then represents the negative aspects of Gvura that then we're saying is used to punish the Rishon. Rav Acha by Yaakov Omer, Alasher Kuntu. Rav Acha by Yaakov says this, Nahar Dinur pours down onto the ones who were cut off. What does that mean? Shenemar, Pasuk in Eos describes, Asher Kuntu V'loy Eis, you have the ones who were cut off without before their time, prematurely. Noho Yutzak Yisoydam, a river that flows is their base, is their foundation. So in other words, this river is flowing onto them, and that's what happens to them. So who are these Asher Kuntu? Who are these generations that were cut off? Tanya Amar Rav Shimon HaChosid, Eilu Shameis V'Shivim V'Abba Dodes Shekuntu Li Boris Kodim Shenivra Olam. There were 974 generations that were cut off and were not that were intended. The word Kuntu actually has a double meaning. It, basically, the word kumtu is a synonym of the word gozar. It means they were cut. And the same way as the word gozar, the word zera in Lashon Kodesh means to cut. And it also means to decide, means it was decided. Hashem decided they would be created, kodim shenivra olam, before the world was created, v'lo nivru, but in the end they weren't created. Rashi explains, we have Hashem's original plan, so to speak, was that the Torah would be given after 1,000 generations, dovet siva la elaf dur. But the Eved Shtah saw that the world is not going to last 1,000 generations without the Torah. That would be tens of thousands of years, as it is, the world would deteriorating pretty badly until then. So the Eved Shtah gave it after only 26 generations. That means there's 974 generations missing. So the Eved Shtah cut them off for the other meaning of Kumtu and decided they were not going to be created after all. So now we're saying that the Nahar Dinur pours down on them in Gehenna. So Rashi says they were banished off to Gehenna. Tosfa says, what are you talking about? What's it their fault? Why should they be banished off to Gehenna? So rather, Tosfa says, what it means is, as the Gemara continues over here, so Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them, so Hashem banished them, others say that Hashem planted them in every generation, v'hein azei ponim shabadur. They are the Azeponim, the brazen chutzpahdika people. In every generation, their neshamas come from those 974 generations. So again, Rashi says that it means that Hashem banished them from the world and didn't create them and wound up consigning them to Gehenna. Tosfos says, what are you talking about? How would that be fair? Would they do wrong if they deserve to be in Gehenna? Tosfos says, no, what it means is Hashem knew in advance that they were going to be Rishoyim, and therefore they wind up, they end up acting in such a way that ends up getting them consigned to Gehenna, where Nahar Dinur pours down onto their heads, and they realize, in other words, they get some one idea of it, in other words, that Gehenna is all about, that a person is finally made to realize what he could have been if he had acted the way he was supposed to, and they get a little bit of a semblance of that from Zaya. They see, look at this, the Chayas HaKodesh are sweating, exerting themselves as much as possible for the Eved Shtah, and why didn't you? Vasher Hosham means that the Eved Shtah judges a person as he is now. Right now, that's the same. Torah was the same. It's not that Hashem right away consigned them to Gehenna. Hashem is saying when they act the way that we expect they're going to act, because they have the tendency to be Rishoyim, then they're going to wind up in Gehenna, and then they're going to have that. And then in Chassidus, in various places, it's brought that these 974 generations are going to shut the cloud. When we talk about these generations that should have been created or not and weren't, we're talking about from Olam HaToyv. So you have in every generation there are neshamas from Olam HaToyv. Sometimes neshamas, rather the Gemara's actually go on to give another explanation, which is going to give another explanation that Asher Kuntu, the generations that are described over there as being cut off, is actually the bracha refers to Tamar HaChamim. So, for example, the Alter Rebbe brings in Hosafos of Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu was in the Shama of Torah. That's why he couldn't speak. It talks about it. That's why it was Kvad Per, Kvad Loshen, because he didn't have the ability from Tikkun to be able to speak properly. But on the other hand, we have Esav is from Olam HaTohu. And so here, in general, the Gemara is saying that these Neshamas of Olam HaTohu in general end up being the no good ones. With that said, you know, you have the famous Chassidish Shavuot that says, for example, when it says in Pirkei Avos, as ponim le Gehenim, reverses ponim le Gan Eden, there's the famous verse that says the as ponim can go to the Gehenims of the world and go on shlichos over there and transform them. The reverses ponim is going to have to stay in Crown Heights or Kfar Chabad or what have you, because they don't dare go out someplace where they might. So in other words, the point is as ponim has its good side as well. So Rav Nachman Yitzchok Amar Shekumtu Livracha. Rav Nachman Yitzchok says that Shekumtu of that pasuk that Hashem decided is actually for a bracha. Eved Tamar Chachamim Shemakamtenas Atzma Meshena Al Divrei Torah VaOlam Hazeh. These are the Tamar Chachamim who cut themselves off from sleep in this world. They forego their sleep in order to learn Torah as much as possible. Hakadosh Baruch Hu Magalal Hem Soid HaNoho LaOlam Habah. And LaOlam Habah, the Eved Shtah will reveal them tremendous secrets, including the secrets of this Nahar Dinur. Chenemar, as the pasuk says, Noho Yutzak Yisoidam, the river that flows, that pours out, is their foundation. So in other words, not in the negative sense that it pours down on the heads of the Rishoyim and they realize what they could have been, but rather it pours down onto the tzaddikim and gives them a foundation and a basis for understanding all the course on a much higher level. Worth mentioning in this regard, by the way, when you talk about this idea that we're saying that the Rishoyim are made to show what they could have been and instead what they became, there's a story they tell about the Nitzir, that he wrote among his Sfarim his famous Sefer Hamet Sha'olah. So when he finished it, he made a siyum on it, and he was telling his Talmidim. He said, when I was 11 or 12 years old, I wasn't a very good Talmud. I mean, it wasn't really a very, very good cheder. So my parents started thinking. So one night I'd gone to bed, he said, I overheard my parents talking, and they were saying, you know, what are we going to do? What are we going to do with him? He's obviously not cut out to be a Talmud Chacham. We'll apprentice him to the local shoemaker here in town. He's an Er L'Chayid. The boy will learn a trade, or learn, you know, and then, yeah. So, when I heard that, I realized I don't want that, and I'm going to apply myself in faith. So he says, now I want you to imagine, says to his Talmidim, if I hadn't overheard that conversation, and they had taken me out of cheder and had me go work for the shoemaker, I would have lived my life out. Yeah, I would have been making shoes. I would have been an Erel Chayid. I would have learned from him how to be what a Yid is supposed to be. But I would have come in front of the Beis Din Shamayla, and they'd ask me, where's the Hamik Shala? Where's the Volozhiner Yeshiva? What Volozhiner Yeshiva? What Hamik Shala? I was a shoemaker. I did as much as I could. And they would show me what I could have been. So therefore he says, this is the simcha that I'm making now, not just that I finished the sefer, but that's that I was able to use my life the way it's supposed to be and accomplish what the Eibishter put me in, whether the capabilities that the Eibishter gave me. The Geula HaSidah, when we see Mashiach Tzidkenu for the first time, the Rebbe says, Mestaber, it's logical that we're going to have to say the Baruch HaShechiyonu. After all, you have a Polshikin with Kalbachoyim, you say Shechiyonu when you haven't seen a dear friend in 30 days. And by the same token, also you make Shechiyonu when you have a baby girl born. So by the same token, you see Mashiach, and he's our good friend, and we're all looking forward to see him, then we'll be making Shechiyonu. There's a file of various places based on various sichas. There's a whole catalog of brachas we're going to say when Mashiach comes Shechiyonu, and Hatoy Ba'amitiv, and Shenosim Mikvoidu, Shecholak Mikvoidu L'Yireyav, and Shenosim Shecholak Mechachmosi L'Yireyav, and so on and so on. Okay. Continuing with halachas about going out with things on Shabbos. So we started talking yesterday about wearing two of the same clothing, one on top of the other. For example, two shirts or two hats or two pair of socks or whatever. So now we started talking about belts, for example, Shabbos key belts and things like that. So it depends. Some places they have the minhag that you wear like a cheap belt underneath and then a fancy belt on top of that. So in such places you would be allowed to do that on Shabbos, even though in reality you're not wearing them that you both need. If it's not, then even if you want to do it for yourself, then again, it would be carried. You can have two belts when you have a garment between them. So one on your pants and another one on your kapata, for example, because then you're having hanah from both of them, practically speaking. Then when it comes to, for example, a Shabbos key belt, like we were talking yesterday, you wear it over your talus cotton to hold your talus cotton in place. Then you have the waistband of your pants or your belt on your pants to hold your pants and your shirt tails in place. And then you have your gautel over your kapata. And each one of them has a function of its own, and therefore that's fine. But if you were to, for example, wear your Shabbos key belt over your shirt, that would be a problem because not accomplishing anything more than the waistband of your pants or than your belt, or your regular belt, are accomplishing.